God doesn't make mistakes. He's not in the business of making mistakes. I was institutionalized. There was this plaque on the wall. It said, so I grabbed an electrical cord and I started wrapping it around my neck and stringing myself up. And I just heard this still little voice saying, Mike, I still have a purpose for your life.
Sounds really fascinating. And I'm really looking forward to listening and understanding exactly what's going on in that space. But before we do get there, let's go right back to the start. A bit about yourself, how it all began, really, and what inspired you to join the U.S. forces.
Oh, the forces. Okay. Well, yeah. As I shared, it was really kind of forced on my hand when I was growing up, because my dad died when I was 15. After we moved around a lot, I was actually born in Aberdeen, South Dakota. And if you ever saw the movie Forrest Gump, where he was really little and had the braces on his legs, I had to go through that too as a child, because I was born with really flat feet. So I got teased a lot as when I was growing up. But so after Aberdeen, I was about 3 and a half. My dad tried to commit suicide when I was 2 years old. I didn't know about that until later in life, obviously, when my brother shared that with me. I have four siblings, my brother and then three sisters. And so, you know, as I grew up, after Aberdeen, we moved to Sauk Center, Minnesota. And it was tough, you know, because my brother was my only friend. He's 2 years older than me. And he would always introduce me to his neighborhood friends and friends from school. And the one thing was, once I got my braces off, I was pretty good in sports. So I got into basketball and football. And those were my two big ones. I really stunk at baseball, so I don't follow baseball. But anyway, that's just being honest. And I'm 6'5", so I was always pretty good in basketball, but that was kind of my favorite sport more than football. But anyway, so after Sauk Center, we moved up to Barnesville, and I was 12 then, and my dad died 3 years later. He started his own clothing store, and he had a massive heart attack, and I was 15, so it was like, okay, now what's going to happen? Our family, my mom had all the kids still at home to support, no way to support them. I had an uncle, James McNally. If you ever want to look him up, he became a Supreme Court justice out in the state of California, and his state of claim was that when Charles Manson out here first got arrested and was seeking legal counsel, he came to my uncle Jimmy, and Jimmy basically told him in a not so nice way, go fly a kite. You know, didn't want anything to do with crazy Charlie. So, but my uncle's advice to my mom after my dad died was to say, you know, just give the bank the keys to your business, so you can save your house, so you'll at least have that secured. Yeah. You'll have a place to live. But my mom didn't follow his advice. She tried. She had never had any experience running a store, or didn't have the foggiest idea what to do. So after about 2.5-3 years of trying to run it on her own, and it was just sinking faster and faster in debt, we basically lost everything. We lost our house, we lost our business. So that's how I joined the military, was I didn't have any options. You know, I needed a place to live. And my dad was in the Air Force. He was actually in the Korean War as a cook. And so I thought, you know, he was in the Air Force. I decided to join the Air Force. So I just kind of.
You then? How old were you when you first joined?
When I first drank, Is that what you said?
No, when you joined the Air Force, how old was you?
I was 18.
18.
No, I take that back. I was 19 because I tried college for a year and flunked out. So then I was really out of options. So that's just being honest. But I think a lot of people have gone down that road. But yeah, the military was interesting. I had that dream sheet in my hand that the recruiter gave me, and I wanted to see the world. That was kind of the biggest reason I did it. And besides not having other options, I thought I'd at least, get to travel and experience other cultures and have that experience that all people would love to have. And the military provides that opportunity to people that are joining the service. So, but long story short, I didn't get out of the state of Texas because when I joined, the basic training was down in Lackland. That's in San Antonio, Texas. And then I had a career that they gave me, I forget the terminology they use, but it's like your job. They have a name for it, but yeah. So the job I had was testing pilots, flying with NATO pilots and taking them through the stresses of flying at altitude. And so we had pressurized altitude chamber where I worked. We took them parasailing. We took them through ejection seat training and all this other fun stuff. But that didn't prepare me for anything on the outside. And when I got bored, I started to get into trouble in the military. I started to drink a lot. And then I found guys not too shortly into my service that were using marijuana. So I started doing that with those guys as well. And what happened to us was there was this gentleman that I got high with one time, and he came on base one night with a pound of marijuana and sold it to an undercover cop. And when he got busted, he started naming names of people that he knew were also smoking pot so that he could try and save his own skin. And they gave us the option after the 12 of us all got busted together to say, well, you can fight it in a military court, but if you lose, you'd be going down to Leavenworth for a minimum of 6 months, doing hard time. And it's like, I'm just going to take the medical discharge. I'm going to go down that road because I'm just going to go back home to Fargo and figure it out once I get there. So I put all my stuff in a U-Haul, took that fateful trip back home to Fargo, and just kind of had to go the hard road in life to find my path. I had to work construction 7 days a week, 12-hour shifts, just to be able to put food on the table. Then I bumped into a buddy of mine that was in the Marine Corps that I had met when I was in college for that year that I flunked out. And the biggest reason I flunked out of college was because I met up with him. He liked to smoke his marijuana, so we were big buddies, So one night, as it turned out, I was in the bars with him, and he said, hey, how about we get together and we'll rent a place? And then that turned out to be the best thing I ever did because he started training me physically. He was a fifth degree black belt in karate and taekwondo and all this stuff that he was very, very accomplished in. And he had all these trophies from all the tournaments he'd won and stuff. So he got me in the best shape of my life. We'd hit the weights. We'd do the, you see my puppy behind me here. Come here, Baxter. Yeah. So it was kind of a fun time. It was summer of 87. That was the summer right before I met my wife. I met her in the fall of 88, and we've been married for just over 35 years, and that's kind of a story in and of itself. But
yeah,
after the all the stuff I put her through and my son too, you know, for all those years, it was just kind of one of those things that I just kind of felt like nowadays I'm called to join into the ministry and the community as much as possible, and to try and make up for all the hard years that I did have going through all the treatment centers and, you know, the homeless shelters and everything else, the jail. I had civil commitments placed on me in two states where I lost my freedoms.
What does this mean?
A civil commitment means that medically or mentally they think you're too unfit to be in the community, so they want you to sit in a place until your mental faculties basically get balanced out through medications and stuff. So I had to go in front of plenty of judges to beg for my freedom, and they always denied me. So I spent two of those civil commitments in chains in different states. And then I also got institutionalized for 6 weeks at the state hospital as they were trying to figure out my medications. So all these things I had gone through in my life kind of took me to that point of journaling, which I shared in the radio interview too, was to say, yeah, you know, that's the only thing when everybody else left me and, you know, kind of turned their back on me. My oldest sister came over here to Fargo and said, he needs to be, you know, in a facility. He doesn't belong on the streets anymore. That really hurt to hear that. But I found a good doctor up at the VA that really helps me these days. And, you know, my medications are balanced now. And that was the big problem I had all my life. So if you come out of a life of addiction, like with me, it was alcohol, then others, like I mentioned earlier, it could be anything. But I'm bipolar. So that's kind of, you know, what they were trying to address medically all the time I was in those facilities, is to say, we have to get his medications balanced. And I was always like having very strange sleep patterns. I would sleep for like maybe 2 hours a night, then I'd be up, and then they were trying to get me back to bed. And, you know, I just had, I don't know if you read my sample chapters on my book, but on my website, I should say, but yeah, those are really graphic. Did you read those?
Yeah. I'm briefly skimmed over them. So it'd be great to look into them to more detail. Just quickly, before we move on, what sort of, if any, support did the military give to you? Obviously, once they discharged you, was there any support from them on next steps or anything? None at all?
No. Once you're discharged in the fashion that us guys were, they basically said, you know, hey, good riddance, you know, go live however you want. My boss that was over the top of me, I'll never forget what he said to me once he found out that I was on the list for people that were going to be kicked out. He said to me, go back to where whatever rock you crawled out from before you joined the military and live your crappy life. And that was kind of the one support he gave me, was a swift boot up my butt on the way out the door. Wow. So, yeah.
That's crazy. Go on, sorry, carry on.
No, I was just going to say that's the only support I got. It was just basically, you know, go figure it out for yourself. So I had to do that. And like I shared with you, it was not a easy road by any stretch of the imagination. It was a life I wouldn't wish on anybody. So these days, what I do, and I did this morning, I got up at like 2 a.m. I couldn't sleep. It was just one of those nights again. Because it takes, even now that I'm not drinking and all this other stuff, it takes years for your brain chemistry to get back on track to where it doesn't need all the medications and everything else. It will balance out over time. And they tell you that if you're in those treatment centers, they say, depending on how long you were using or how hard you were using, those factors play in. And so it was like saying, okay, Mike, go figure it out and, you know, deal with it. So now at 2 a.m. when I woke up, this is my daily routine, is that I went to the Life Recovery Bible and I started reading out of it. And that calms my day and brightens my day and gets me off on the right track every day. And I do that before I go to bed at night too, and during the day as well, just so I'm grounded in God's word and saying, you know what, I don't have to live like I did in the past, because God loves me just like he loves everybody, and he wants to see you have the future that he put you on this earth for. And last night when I was leading the guys, I was saying, we all have talents, right? God gave us, no one person is unique, or I should say, every one person is unique. There's no people two alike. So we're all here given gifts of some kind. We all have individual gifts. Some have the gift to gab, some have the gift as musicians or athletes or whatever. And I don't know what my gift is. Some people say I have just that personality where I can go up to anybody and start a conversation and just sit down and say, you know, like I shared with you, hey, you know, what's your thing that I can pray for you about today? You know, if you need somebody to talk to, I'm here, and just be honest and genuine with them. And I think that's why I'm here, is to just share my story and say, you know what, hey, I've been down that road. I'll never forget that when I didn't share this in the radio interview, but when I was institutionalized, there was this plaque on the wall. It said, you have been given this life because you're strong enough to live it. And that really encouraged me. Because like I said, there was nobody else around that I could turn to or talk to. So that really encouraged me and gave me the spring in my step that I needed when I was in that really dark place.
Wow. So, but before you started reading, obviously the Bible, and you're doing these, you said that you obviously you run the
small men's group.
What did you use before then to cope or to manage that? What was that like?
Well, to be honest with you, I was always trying to just figure it out mentally without having God in the middle of it and saying, you know what, I don't need God. Because if you read that one sample chapter, and I might sound like a shameless self-promoter here, but that one sample chapter where it says, my tour in hell forever damned, it was talking about how I journaled saying that I was actually in a place, in a straitjacket, in a padded cell for 3 days, where I was experiencing exactly what hell would have been like. And I felt the flames. I had all the accusations. The Bible says that the enemy is the accuser of the brethren. So I was being accused of every evil thing I have ever done in my life. And it was like, I was just in a state where there was like, I knew there was no hope of ever getting out of that state. And when I came to, there was this nurse in there, and I was strapped to a bed, and she said, Mike, are you awake? And I just looked at her, and she told me later, she said, Mike, I want to share this with you. When you came out of that, jumping around in the padded cell for those 3 days and stuff, and I woke up, you look like a cornered animal, scared cornered animal. Your eyes were just like saucers. And it was, that was, so after that experience, I drank so heavy that it was like, I couldn't figure out why God would have me go through that. And I think now that I shared that with you, I think it's to say to people, not only is heaven real, but so is hell, you know, because Jesus in the Bible talks about that as much as he does, and even more so than heaven. He warns about how awful that is. And there's, if you read the 16th chapter of Luke, which is in my autobiography, it's about the parable of the rich man and Lazarus. And the rich man's in hell, and Lazarus is taken down in by Father Abraham to show him that. And the rich man's in torment and says to him, Father Abraham, please have Lazarus dip a finger in some water because my tongue is on fire and unquenchable. And it's just, Father Abraham replies and says, basically, you're out of luck because in your good day, you had it all and you treated people so poorly and on and on and on. I'm paraphrasing a lot here, but that's the basics of it. And it, it shares that story. And I knew what it was like because I experienced it, like I said. And when I write about it and people comment on it, the comment I always get when I share my story with people and I give out my autobiography for free to people is to say that when they read it, they didn't have any idea until they read it how intense it was, because it's raw and it's talking about the truth about what people go through that have bipolar and those episodes, what they can be like, how awful they can be. So it's bringing awareness to that is what I'm all about these days, is to just share and say, you know what? Hey, if I can survive it, just like the plaque said, right? You've been given this life because you're strong enough to live it. Then if I can survive it and share my story to as many people as possible before I get stuck 6 feet under, then I think my mission here will be well served and I'll be allowed into the kingdom of heaven. And I think that is what everybody is here for, is to share their testimony with people. It doesn't have to be as dramatic as mine. It can just be their story of their struggles and their honesty about it and how they cope. Maybe they cope in different ways than I do, but you know, that's fine too. It doesn't have to be an all-encompassing approach, but to me it does, because it's like I was so heavily involved in using for all those years and having my bipolar episodes and everything else, that it's like I have to stay active. I have to be involved in all those groups and church and everything else. I actually called the Billy Graham prayer line yesterday because I was listening to him on TV for one of his old crusades that they were replaying. So I just kind of made a fresh dedication to God, saying, you know what, I'm all yours. Use me any way you want until you call me home. And that's where I'm at right now in my walk. I just kind of have that love for God renewed in my heart now. I have a 93-year-old mother-in-law that is a little prayer warrior that has been praying for me for years. So, yeah, she's a special lady, and so is my wife. Yeah. So I married into a very nice family. A lot of those people are all believers, and they've all been praying for me for decades. So I couldn't have.
It's amazing. Yeah. It's amazing to see, obviously, and hear exactly what you just said there. And it's hard to picture the life, obviously, that led to what it is now, after seeing obviously how well you're doing now. But there must have, obviously, there's some really low moments, obviously, during that struggle. And I read on your website about some suicide attempts as well. Would you care to speak about them?
Yeah, my first one was while I was still in high school, right after my dad died. I I did something really stupid. I had convinced some friends of mine to let me drive their car, one of their vehicles, on a crazy ride. And I had the intent of not only killing myself, but them too, by driving the car 100 miles an hour head on into an oncoming two-way highway where there was like a lift. So when we hit that, there's blind spots all over to where when you're going down that road as fast as you can, they were screaming up to the top of their lungs saying, what are you doing? What the hell's going on? And I didn't say anything. I just kept driving, right? Intoxicated out of my mind and hit it. But I'd always tried that before on my own and it never worked. So I just kept trying it until I finally did connect with another vehicle. But that, by the grace of God, that never actually happened. We came so close. We flew over the highway at 100 miles an hour and wound up in the ditch upside down in the car. And it was filled with water because it was springtime out. So needless to say, I lost all my friends from school because they thought, man, this guy is nuts. So, yeah, that was my first attempt. And then my second attempt I got back home after being in one of the homeless shelters. And there, in our basement, there are these beams that you could, if you wanted to, you could hang yourself on them. So I grabbed an electrical cord and I started wrapping around my neck and stringing myself up. And I just heard this still little voice saying, Mike, I still have a purpose for your life. And that stopped me.
That's very touching. And have you always been religious then, even back then? You believed in God?
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, Jack, when I was growing up, my family was raised me as a Catholic. And I'm not going to get into bashing Catholics here, but when I met my wife, I converted into like an evangelical free type of church to where I did away with Catholicism, and my dearly departed mother was not happy because I left the Catholic Church. So that in our church these days, they just teach out of the Bible. There's not as much tradition and all of the pageantry that you have in the Catholic Church. It's more just reading out of God's word and letting that message speak to you in church. Mm-hmm. So to be honest with you, I'm not attending church nearly as often as I need to, but that recommitment yesterday when I was telling you about Billy Graham, that I will be from this day forward going to church every Sunday. I need to pick up my game on that. My wife and I should be going together, and that's been missing now for a long time. But it's kind of a balancing act too, because I had a really good guy that used to lead our Thursday night men's group, and he was always there in that group and all these other groups. And his wife finally gave him an ultimatum and said, you know, I need you home to play the role of husband more than having you out in the community so much. But my wife is so understanding. She knows that that's what's needed for me to stay on the right track and, you know, not derail like I always would in the past. So I'm in a good place these days, and I'm thankful to God first and foremost, and to my friends and to the guys in the jail chaplain ministry, like I mentioned, and, you know, all the support for my wife's side of the family. My side of the family is all pretty much disowned me because of what I shared with you with my older sister. And, you know, it's tough because I'd love to have a relationship with everybody, but, you know, all of my hard living for all those years came with a price, and the price I pay, still pay every day, is that they don't want anything to do with me. They have made it very clear not to email them or call them or do anything, not to have any contact with them. And they live in the same town I do. Most of them do anyway, I should say. But yeah, it's, so that's the other side of the coin, you know? And like I shared in the radio interview also right at the end, I said, my story is titled The Gutter Gospel, but then the subtitle is The Road to Redemption. And, you know, I think if I could sum it up best, I would say there was this saying I heard years ago that every saint has a past and every sinner has a future. And I think that kind of shares and sums up everything we've been talking about today, is to say, you know what, nobody's perfect. And hey, if you're in church and you're going to church and you're doing everything like I'm trying to do, you know, I have a past that I'm not proud of, but every sinner like me has a future, and every saint like I'm trying to become has a past. So that's just being honest.
No, I think it's a very good saying, and I completely agree. Tell me some more about your men's groups that you run. I know we spoke briefly about them earlier before the cameras were recording. So just talk to me a little bit more about the men's group, just for the guests that are listening and watching today.
Well, sure. Basically, we read out of the Life Recovery Bible to talk about, you know, what God's looking at us. And given us that message to discuss this week, I'll share this with you, that I was reading out of Ephesians last night, chapter 4 to be specific, verses 7 through 16, and it was sharing about how we all have unique gifts and unique talents, and that's very true. That gives people hope, you know, to build up the church is really what it's there for, is to say that, like, we have a guy in our Thursday night men's group, for example, Jack, that is an excellent guitar player and a vocalist, but the guy is so shy, it's like he doesn't dare want to go out in public. And then on my, this is how I love it. Each group has its own unique group of people to it. They're not all the same, going to the same groups. So on our Saturday men's group, we've got a gentleman from Jamaica that I got to go over and sing to my mother-in-law in the nursing home about a week or two ago. And that guy's got a tremendous voice, and he is not shy about sharing it with anybody. Last month I just lost a very dear friend of mine to cancer. His name was Brad Witzke. And he had such a great heart for God, and it was so painful watching him pass away with that. But here's the story about how Lathan is the guy that from Jamaica that has that tremendous voice. He went to sing to Brad when Brad was up in the hospital on his last legs. And Lathan would sing out of this Psalms 163, verse 1 through 3 song. So it's out of Psalms, the book of Psalms. And when he was singing it, all these nurses and doctors were walking by, and he's got a very loud voice when he sings. So they were kind of looking in, and Brad would kind of motion to him after he finished the song, and he couldn't really say anything, but he kind of motioned and spin his fingers like, again, do it again. So Lathan would sing the same song again to encourage Brad, who was about to go to heaven. And he just kept singing it over and over and over again. And at his service, when Brad passed away back in December, Lathan got up and gave his testimony about that day that he was in the hospital with Brad. And he said, Brad just had such a glow on his face when that I would keep singing that song to him. I must have sung it almost 20 times that I counted before Brad started dozing off and went back to sleep. But yeah, so
amazing story.
Yeah, so like I said, you know, you got Rob on the one hand on the Thursday night group has all that talent, individual talents like I'm talking about that we've all been given. And then Lathan also has that talent. And there's a dear lady from our church that has a tremendous singing voice that visits my mother-in-law in the hospital or in the nursing home, pardon me. But she also sings to Shirley is her name, my mother-in-law. So all these people with all these great talents, and it doesn't, like I shared earlier, it doesn't have to be a musician. It can be anybody that has any given talent to glorify God. You know, whenever people interview sport athletes, as an example, after a big win, they'll say, you know, I want to thank my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. They have the talent to play some type of position to a very high level in the professional ranks. And so we got a guy up here that's going to be speaking Sunday night at the men's group that just won the national championship at our division. It's the NDSU Bison. And we've won 10 national titles in the last, I think it's 15 years since they moved up to that division. And that's just one division below, like Georgia and Alabama and all those big schools. So they've got a lot of talented guys on that roster. And one of them that was the linebacker, starting linebacker for him, is going to be speaking at the Sunday night men's group and glorifying God for what God's given him, the talent to do in his life as an athlete, to have that platform to share the gospel. So that's what it's all about, really, in the end. That's why we're all here, is to, you know, glorify God and find our purpose in life. You know what I mean? It's like if we can find our purpose in life, the rest is gravy.
No, I agree. And you spoke earlier about a film as well. What's that all about?
I can send you a link if you guys want to look it up. It spells out it's called I, so the letter I, then C as in cat, V as in victory, M as in media. So it's the International Christian Video Media Platform. And what they do is every year they have a thing called Popcorn Night. For 5 minutes, you can get up and pitch your story to all the faith-based producers, directors, investors, all this stuff through the Storytellers Conference on ICVM. So I can definitely send you the link. And if you want to send that out to your listeners, they can check it out. It's October 4th coming up down in Orlando, Florida. So I'm going to be going down to that and pitching my story. You know, once the novel, my autobiography gets finished, I'm going to have that. I'm not sure if I'm going to actually do my own podcast or not, because, you know, I've only got so much time in the day. And how much time do you invest in your podcast every day? Do you know?
Not every day. So the podcast is actually something that I do on the side. So I run my own business day to day. And then I just wanted to speak with some really interesting people and understand the struggles and the successes of their lives and just learn about different things. So that's why I started doing the podcast. So depending on what guests we get on, like I said, it can be a case of 3-4 hours a week to 10 hours a week. It all depends on who we're speaking to and that, really. But I'm really enjoying it. And like I said, the story that you've shared today on your journey and your life has been amazing, and I'm very grateful for the time that you've given to share it. It's truly fascinating, and it's great to see that someone can come from the lowest of lows of a suicide attempt to where you are now, being able to talk about it and run men's groups and advocate for US veterans and just other people in general that are going through a hard time and struggling in life, because like you said, life isn't easy, and there's definitely obstacles in the way that you have to overcome, and again, it's great to see how well you've come and what you're doing for the society and your community.
Yes, sir. Well, I just want to get it out there to as broad an audience as I can. And that's why I was looking into actually doing my own podcast. But then also this morning after I got up, I was doing some Google searches. And since I'm a veteran, I put this into Google, something to the effect of like top veteran-friendly podcasters in the U.S. And it doesn't have to even necessarily be the U.S. It could be anywhere. But I just had that in there because so that's why I typed in, and obviously all these great results popped up. So when I go to the VA with my custom shirts, as I was sharing with you earlier, I just feel at home within the VA because those guys are so easy to talk to for me. As I was sharing earlier, I just go up to them and say, "Hey, I want to thank you for your service. And when did you serve? What branch were you in?" And, you know, so I go up there all the time. Like I was just up there last week for some dental work, and same thing, you know, conversations just get sparked up right away when you're up there with those guys. And, you know, I remember I was in one of my treatment centers years ago, and I was sharing with this guy. We were standing in line to get our medications dispensed to us for the night, because when you first get there, they don't allow you to do that on your own. You have to have them do it at the nurse's station. So he was ahead of me, and we were just kind of striking up a conversation. And I shared a little bit about my past, and I said, "You know, sir, I don't really feel like I'm qualified to be a veteran because I was kicked out after just under 2.5 years for smoking pot. And if you look at society these days, you know, pot's legal everywhere, and you know, that's not even a part of the story I should share." But anyway, he said to me, "Mike, you're a veteran because if you served active duty for any amount of time, you're a veteran. So don't beat yourself up over getting kicked out. Everybody's got stuff they're dealing with." And that encouraged me that at that moment, you know, there's just so many guys within the service that I could really relate to. I loved being in the military while I was there. I don't know how old you are, Jack, but there was the show that was on TV many years ago called MASH. Did you ever see it? It's in syndication.
Yeah. I used to watch it actually with my dad. So yeah, I mean, I think it was out before I was born, but yeah, and I think it stopped before I started watching it. But yeah, I definitely watched the reruns and stuff like that. Yeah, it's a great. Well, I think it's a great program.
You're gonna laugh when I tell you why I brought this up. So anyway, here's what the story goes. My room, I turned into the swamp, just like on the TV show. Because they would sit in the swamp and drink alcohol, right, after a hard day's work. They had their still and everything else in the show. So we kind of emulated that, me and my roommate. We had, like, this mural of alligators coming out of a swamp that a buddy of mine drew on our walls. And then we had mesh netting on our ceiling. And all the guys from the dorm, I was in a co-ed dorm, would go there to drink and party after their work day. So that my room was kind of the center of the dorm, and I called it the swamp, and I painted it in like fluorescent green paint and decked it totally out. And even my colonel at work stopped by for a beer one night. He stopped me at the office one day and said, "What's this I keep hearing about your room being all decorated and everybody going there?" I said, yeah, well, why don't you come over to tomorrow or to my room today or anytime soon. You want to show up, I'll buy you a beer. So sure enough, that night he knocks on my door, comes in and sits down, has a beer. And he's just like, I don't know what to say, Mike, but this is very interesting. So I've always been unique and loud, I guess, in my own way. But yeah, I just turned 60 in October, so you'd think I'd settle down by now. So I don't know.
Keep being you.
Yeah, that's what you got to do in life. Yeah,
exactly.
That's the old saying, you be you. Don't try and be anybody else. Exactly. Just be yourself.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. Look, Mike, before we finish and we close this up, what support is there out there for like I said, people like yourselves and for veterans, and where can they find it?
Oh, that's a good question. I would contact your local veterans office and at the VA if you are a veteran. As far as people that are not military veterans, I know depending on there's all kinds of prayer lines you can call into if you just do Google searches, prayer lines, suicide prevention. You know, there's all these different things that are out there in the community and out in the world to help people if they reach out. And reaching out is the hardest thing to do. You know, I was isolating for all those years, but I just heard something interesting on the radio today that said that God doesn't want you stuck in the past. He's got a bright future for you. So if you can kind of cling to that thought and then reach out for the help you need, it's out there for you. So just go online, you know, and look up whatever it is that you think fits after you've heard this conversation with you, Jack, and myself, and say, okay, well, I'm considering suicide, like Mike shared with, and I apologize for getting a little emotional when I was talking about it, but it's painful. It's painful when you're in those dark places. It's very painful. So I would encourage people greatly to reach out for help, and don't be afraid to do that, because God's got a bright future for you. God doesn't make mistakes. He's not in the business of making mistakes. You were born for a reason, and cling to that and say, okay, you know, feel free to call me. I'll make my email. Send them to Jack, and then Jack will forward them to me. And I'll, if that's okay, Jack. And I'll,
of course, yeah, of course.
Yeah, I'll respond to them very quickly, because I have, right now I'm 100% disabled military veteran, which means that I have, at the first of the month, I get a nice sizable check from the government because I'm unable to work anymore. So I now am fully retired. So I enjoy all my free time with my three dogs and responding to emails and phone calls and texts and everything else. So yeah, I hope that answers your question. Feel free to reach out to yourself, and then you can forward their information on to me, and I can put them in contact with whoever it is, whatever it is that they're struggling with. I'll help them, each and every one by one. Because I just heard this thing on the radio. This was yesterday. There's this gentleman now going out. His goal in life before he dies is to touch as many people one-on-one as he can before he dies. And so he strikes up conversations with them and finds the most amazing stories in people. So that's what I would encourage people to do, is to say, you know what, that is, that's going to give me a fuel to continue to go on to the next day. God's got the future, and he's got a plan for you, a perfect plan. I wish I could quote that verse out of Jeremiah. It goes something like, God's path for you. I'm butchering this really poorly, but it's God's got a bright future for you is the message. So I'll, in the meantime, when you do get those forwarded to me, I'll look it up and get that verse to them. So I'll give them a lot of Bible verses, but I'm not going to thump the Bible. I'm going to be talking to them one-on-one to have them feel free to give me their phone numbers or whatever, because I'll reach back out to them and share as much time as they want with me. I'll leave it at this. I have a chapter in my book that talks about the Sea of Tears, and that's something I saw in my dream one night, and I wrote about it. And it says, the story basically goes like, I saw Christ coming towards me in this beautiful glassy sea that looked so crystal beautiful, it was indescribable. And then off to my right was this beautiful multicolored waterfall. And then behind me was this great big stack of dirty, filthy, muddy pennies. So this was the parable in my dream. And so Christ approaches me and I'm asking questions like, what does all this mean? And he said, Mike, go to the pile of pennies behind you and just take one of the muddy pennies and come back here by my feet. So I did it. And I go, okay, God, now what? And he goes, wash it in the sea of tears until it comes crystal clear and bright as a shiny new penny. So I did that. And he goes, job well done, Mike. And then I said, well, what does this mean, Lord? And he said, the parable of the muddy penny is that make one penny shine. The penny represents one hurting soul. And if you can make that one penny shine brightly by caring for it deeply, it will then take another muddy penny from the pile and do the same parable behind time and time again until all the muddy pennies are taken care of on my planet.
100% agree. 100%. Couldn't agree more. I think that's a great way to end our conversation today. So, as long as there's nothing else that you want to discuss or finish up with.
Can I get a recording of this recording?
Of course.
Yeah, of course.
I'll email that over to you. 100%. And like I said, I'll put obviously my email address and that in the description of this podcast. And anyone that is struggling or wants to reach out to Mike, just feel free to drop me a message, and we'll put you in touch together. And I'm sure Mike will be able to help you and have some meaningful conversations.
Beautiful. Yeah, like I said, feel free to send them all over to me and I'll take care of them for you.
Perfect. I really appreciate that, Mike, and I really appreciate your time. And thank you so much for sharing so much of your story. It's, again, really appreciated.